What, did I say something wrong?
No, I burped.
That was a burp?
It didn't sound like it at all. It sounded like you were whispering.
Yeah.
I said, excuse me afterwards. That's what you heard.
Oh, okay. Because it was like, it sounded like you were whispering.
Yeah, like I said something.
Yeah, I was whispering, excuse me. The reflex.
Welcome to season 12 of She Builds Podcast, where we share stories about women in the design and construction field, one lady at a time.
This season's theme is government, civic work, and urban planning. We are talking about ladies who were involved in public projects or services.
As always, we are not experts. We are just sharing stories about the information we find as friends having a fun conversation. If you find an error, send us an email and we will all continue learning together.
Today, I want to tell you about Matilde Diaz Vélez, an urbanist and developer who began the Carlos Diaz Vélez Foundation. I'm Nurjeri Rivas, thinking about my finances in Houston, Texas.
Hi, I'm Jessica Rogers, got paid and paid bills and taxes, based out of Miami, Florida.
Hey there, I'm Lizzie Rahr, glad I'm done with my taxes in San Francisco.
Whoop, whoop.
Woo! Get ready, ladies. We're going to Argentina.
Yeah.
Vamos.
Yeah.
Vámonos. Okay. The time, July 2nd, 1899. The place, Buenos Aires, Argentina. Matilde Diaz Vélez Álvarez de Toledo was born.
Whoa.
Her parents were Carlos Segundo Diaz Vélez Iturriague and Matilda Juliana Maria Álvarez de Toledo Fikes. And these people were well-to-do. Carlos was an engineer, a rancher, and an entrepreneur.
I mean, with names like that, they sound like they were shaking and baking.
Yeah, those are some fancy names. When you have like five names, you're fancy, you know?
Yes.
I agree.
Yeah.
We're starting with the upper echelon, I see.
Yes.
Yes. Both Carlos and Juliana were considered aristocrats of Buenos Aires. The thing is, they both came from well-known families. On her father's side, Matilde was the great-granddaughter of Eustoquio Diaz Vélez. Eustoquio was a decorated military general involved in Argentina's War of Independence from Spain and interim governor of Buenos Aires.
So what I'm hearing is that Matilde is basically a descendant of royalty.
I mean, it sounds like it.
On her mother's side, she was literally Spanish nobility, descendant from the Álvarez de Toledo family. I resisted doing a deep dive on this, so all I can say is that this high nobility lineage goes all the way back to the 12th century.
Whoa.
It's like the king and queen and then the Álvarez de Toledo.
What?
Okay, not really. Don't quote me, because I didn't. That's probably not the family tree. But what I'm saying is these people were high up in the food chain. Let's say that.
Yeah.
They would be in the Spanish version of Bridgerton somehow.
Probably.
You know? But either way, we're talking about Matilde is doubly royal in some capacity.
Yeah. Oh, shoot. Like actual royalty.
Yeah.
Jace.
Okay, so all that to say, Matilde's high class.
Yep.
Agree.
Her family called her Patina, and that's really cute. But I like the name Matilde, so I'm going to call her Matilde on this episode.
Oh, okay. So we're not on close personal terms with Matilde. Understood.
Noted. We're not that royal yet, mm-mm, so we have to call her Matilde.
Yeah, we're not upper echelon enough.
We're not upper echelon. We got three names.
It reminds me of Matilda. Do you remember that movie Matilda? That was one of my favorites.
Yes, of course.
So, I just want to call her Matilde. Okay. Matilde had an older sister named Maria del Carmen Felicitas Diaz Vélez Álvarez de Toledo. It's a really long name. People called her sister Tita.
Yeah, that's a mouthful. But they really went all out with shortening it, huh? Like, You know what I mean? Like, they're just like, and short.
Short. They're like, girl, ain't nobody got time for all this. Tita. That's what we're talking about.
Tita was a bit older than Matilde. She was born on July 10th, 1893.
So Matilde was the baby.
Yeah. Just a few years apart, a few days apart, and they are both July babies.
That's true. Whoop, whoop. During their childhood, they lived with their family in the Díaz Vélez Palace in Buenos Aires. This building has so much history, it has its own Wikipedia page.
Whoa. What?
You want me to share a little bit about it?
Yeah.
Palace? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We were not kidding about royalty up in here. Yes, tell us about it.
Yeah, she's a princess, and I didn't imagine we would be talking about aristocracy during the season of urban planning, government, municipal ladies, but yes, please tell us about this place.
It's somewhat related.
Somewhat related, but I love it. Give me a princess story.
Okay, I'm glad you want to hear about it because I was going to tell you anyway.
Great.
The Díaz Vélez Palace was built by Matilde's granddad, first as a one-story building, kind of classical with columns and a garden surrounding it. Then in the 20th century, it had a complete makeover to be more Beaux-Arts style. Three-story building, like seriously a palace.
Wow.
Moving on up. Literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
From what I can tell, at least two of Grandpa Eustoquio's kids were still living at home, Carlos and Eugenio. And not just the kids, who were now adults. We got Eugenio, along with his wife Maria and two daughters, slumming it with Carlos, Juliana, Tita, and Matilde.
Oh, geez.
It was a palace, after all. So I imagine it was big enough for three generations to share a roof.
I mean, it sounds like it.
Yeah, no bunk beds over here. It also, no trundles, you know?
Yeah.
It also sounds like a fun way to grow up, like with all those people in one place.
It does, like the families all together. I really liked it. That's what I understood from the research I was doing. I was like, oh, okay, so they're all together. That's really lovely.
Family first.
Grandpa passed away in 1909 and left the palace to his son, Eugenio, who, by the way, was an architect. So that's kind of fun.
Oh,
nice.
Eugenio hired the famous French landscape architect, Carlos Thais, to remodel the gardens. Let's call him French Carlos. So French Carlos added new fountains and statues.
Oh, very nice. I'm not going to lie. French Carlos's name felt real short to me at first glance, after all these names.
Yeah.
He's not part of the family.
I mean, yeah, I know. It was very apparent.
Yeah, very apparent. I wonder if they referred to him as French Carlos and the other dad as Argentinian Carlos.
I doubt it.
Probably not. It would be like Dad Carlos at minimum. Like,
well, they got all the names like Dad Argentinian Carlos de la Mede.
For all we know, Carlos has some nickname that's like this long. You know?
Who knows?
Adelito. I don't know.
Little 10-year-old Matilde lost granddad and kind of loses her home too. Dad Carlos, because now we're going to call him Dad Carlos.
Yep.
Nice.
Inherited different properties. Because Eugenio kept the palace and Dad Carlos got a different property.
Oh.
And you heard me. Plural. Properties.
Okay.
So they moved to this petite hotel, which I learned is a term for an aristocratic vacation home. Okay. But they actually made that their new home and would spend their summers at another family property in Un Durazno, which was part of their business and it had a farm. And Dad Carlos worked on expanding the house and the estate at Un Durazno for his workers, giving workers living quarters with electricity, running water, bathrooms. Y'all, this is where Matilde is growing up, surrounded by all this architecture, splendor, entrepreneurship, development, you name it, she's seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like Dad Carlos was good to his workers, but also a savvy entrepreneur.
Yeah. I love how empathetic Dad Carlos is. And what a great opportunity to see, like, different residences or, like, resident types in different contexts.
It also sounds like Matilda's living the life.
She a princess, okay? For real.
Despite being kicked out of the palace, like...
Yeah, she just went to the vacation home. Poor baby.
Yeah, the petite hotel.
Yeah.
Well, seriously, Matilda was soaking up everything happening around her. And who better to be a role model than Dad Carlos? He was not just an engineer and entrepreneur. He was also an urbanist and developer and a bit of a philanthropist. He worked on expanding the estate of Un Durazno, like I just said. He wanted to modernize the town so that his workers could live well. He developed a master plan with housing, church, a school, and a bank. Matilde learned to follow the varied businesses of ranching, managing livestock, and philanthropy, following the example she received from her father, Dad Carlos.
Okay, wow. Oh, wow. Okay, Dad Carlos, we see you.
Yes, that sounds amazing.
In 1914, Dad Carlos hired the Díaz Vélez favorite landscape designer, Carlos Thais, to design a park that joined the natural landscape, which included a lagoon, with the Italian-inspired architecture of the house in Un Durazno.
French Carlos returns!
But that brings in some Italian.
You know, why not? That same year, Tita, remember sister Tita? Mm-hmm. She married the civil engineer Belisario Ernesto Álvarez de Toledo on December 11, 1914. Mm.
Is that like her cousin? Isn't that one of their 100 names?
Ooh.
I mean, that's very aristocratic of them.
True.
I could not find anything saying that they were family. If they were... I believe that they must have been distant cousins.
Okay. Okay.
I really, like, I looked. I looked for family trees.
Oh, you saw our names.
Yeah. I didn't find any family tree linking the two of them together. So
okay,
maybe they were very distant cousins. So Tita made Matilde an aunt 7 times.
Whoa, Tita.
Matilde never married or had children, so she ended up being really, really close with her nieces and nephews.
I mean, I'm sure Tita had some hired help, but that's a lot of kids.
Who knows?
It sure is. But I love that Matilde was living her best Tia life.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tia Matilde is in the house. Tia Patina, probably.
Uh-huh. Probably. But we're not close enough to call her that, so.
Yeah, her nieces and nephews called her that. We... Matilde.
That's right.
Matilde was also a close friend of Victoria Ocampo, a famous Argentinian writer, founder and publisher of the magazine Sur, one of the most famous literary magazines of its time in Latin America.
Ooh, okay. I see you, Matilde, shaking and baking like your folks.
In March 1920, Dad Carlos was named vice president of a hospital he and townspeople wanted to build in the town of Rauch. It would be named General Eustoquio Díaz Vélez Hospital. On the day of its inauguration, October 19, 1925, Dad Carlos passed away from a cardiac syncope.
Oh, roller coaster of emotions. That must have been a tough blow, not only for the family, but for the townspeople as well.
Yeah. Oh, no. Also, the irony of it being a hospital opening and him dying is not lost on me. That's so sad.
It is so sad. But this is about to change Matilde's life. Of course. I mean, her dad just passed away. I'll tell you what happens next after a word from our sponsors. Listeners, this is a great time to remind you that you can buy us coffee. You can go to our website and hit donate. Buy us coffee. Support our mission.
Hey there, architecture enthusiast. Nikita Reed here, inviting you on an incredible journey through time and space with my podcast, Tangible Remnants. Historic preservation and sustainability? Let's go ahead right now and debunk the myth that they are opposites. In fact, They are two sides of the same coin, shaping our collective future.
In a work environment, it has been challenging because I've had to probably do more than double just to make sure that I quote unquote fit in. But the environments that have allowed me to do me on the front end, I've been extremely successful.
You look at all these PhDs, they've built that on the backs of our elders.
Absolutely.
What they consider themselves to be experts at is what they've worked with us to achieve.
I know we have to prioritize people before products and before place.
Join me as we unravel the stories of historic buildings shaped by the people of a specific era and often influenced by race and gender. These tangible remnants are windows into our past and guideposts for the future. Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe now to Tangible Remnants. Let's explore the interconnectedness of architecture, preservation, sustainability, race, and gender.
And we're back. Guess who's gonna take over the business?
Matilde!
That's right.
That's right. Matilde Big Boss Diaz Velez. That's who.
Just adding a few more names to the repertoire.
She took charge managing, maintaining, and renovating assets and lands that she inherited. And she was like, I think I'm going to take this land, continue my family's legacy, and expand the design of the towns we have. Sure, that's what I'm going to do.
Learning from her papa.
Yeah, girl, keep it going.
Okay, check this out. She started out her urban planner life with the project Villa Díaz Vélez, today a seaside area of the city of Necochea. The land had been in her family for years. In fact, town planning had begun under her grandpapa, Eustoquio Díaz Vélez. Eustoquio had drawn up the initial town plan with streets, and a little construction had started in his time towards the end of the 19th century.
Ooh, interesting.
I am loving the direction we're heading.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Dad Carlos kept going with the vision. He incorporated the land with the town of Necochea, and he brought nature to the master plan. He organized for thousands of trees to be planted to help with the strong winds from the coast and gave greenery to the town. He also established a charity foundation to help poor people in the community. Then, he donated land to the town of Necochea to build a town square, a children's home, and a public hospital. He also donated towards the building itself.
Oh, so admirable.
Yeah, I mean, Dad Carlos was a good guy. The town really lost a gem when he died.
Mm-hmm.
After Carlos' passing, Matilde, along with her sis, continued to build the town. Matilde believed all Argentinians deserved the opportunity to own proper housing. So she focused on allocating more space for housing and selling lots to people that wanted to build dwellings. The sisters began promoting this whole place as a seaside town for people to move and live their best life, and also as a place for city dwellers to go on vacation. Allegedly, this was something novel at the time, the idea of a seaside retreat in Argentina. The idea was planted by Grandpa Eustoquio and Dad Carlos watered it, and then Matilde and Tita blossomed it. They were able to market and hype up a seaside vacation town, making it one of the oldest vacation spots on Argentina's Atlantic coast today.
Oh, that sounds lovely. I love all of this.
Amazing.
This put into perspective for me how long urban planning takes.
Yeah.
This was three generations in the making. It was privately funded, so that may slow or speed up things depending on the family's resources and the agenda. But still, Rome wasn't built in a day. Urban planning takes a long time. You gotta be someone who is on the long game to be in that field, honestly.
For real, Rome wasn't built in a day. Argentina and the town of Necochea wasn't built in a day. And from what we learned from our conversation with the HUD director, Regina Gray, when it comes to these developments, a lot of factors are involved, which probably drags the process too.
For sure. I mean, construction in general on one building can take years. So imagine planning out infrastructure at such a large scale and the approvals and the buy-in from landowners. There's so many factors that you have to consider and make come together, which can be kind of a miraculous thing, you know, when it works.
Yeah.
Matilda's other project that I want to discuss today is the town of Guernica. It grew from her idea of the great importance of work and access to decent housing.
Okay, so when you said Guernica, my first thought was the Picasso painting. But yes, I totally agree with this philosophy. And it reminds me of another lady's philosophy, Dorothy Muir Richardson, and her efforts to support more home ownership.
I also thought of that painting.
Yeah.
She had land in El Partido de San Vicente that was known as La Yaya. On May 18, 1934, she presented to the Ministry of Public Works of the province of Buenos Aires a plan to take that land to fund a new town named Guernica. That's what she wanted it to be named. Her main major part of that plan was to allocate a lot of lots to be sold for housing.
I don't know why I just assumed that they had land and just built whatever they wanted and not have to ask permission. Like, I thought that's how they were doing what they were doing.
You can't know? Do that today either.
Oh, no, they got money.
No, no. Matilda's going through the proper channels.
Yeah.
Okay. They were royal, not shady.
Okay, but what did they say?
Well, they didn't respond right away.
leaving them hanging?
Early next year, she started the urban layout on the land, marking out plots for civic and religious spaces, post office, school, houses, and areas for small farms and orchards. She was thinking about all the necessary components a town would need built in order for the community to grow.
Yeah, she was. I like that she made sure to think through all the pieces that would be needed.
That's right.
With all that work and a solid plan, the powers that be could not say no. Officially, on August 16, 1935, the provincial executive branch approved the project to create the town.
That's right.
How could they not?
Matilda donated her land for this to get built. She also planned for a cultural, social, and sports club of Guernica. She wanted the town to be a community for artists. She also thought about the landscape design and nature, just like her dad did. She hoped for the town to be seen as a garden city.
Oh, where you at, French Carlos?
Ooh, is French Carlos gonna make another appearance?
She dedicated the rest of her life to continue running her family business, supporting social causes of the time, such as the Feminine Association for Rural Action. And she was also very involved in the publishing of Sur magazine that I mentioned earlier. When the founder of the magazine passed away in 1979, Matilda kept it going. She did this until she passed away herself on June 9, 1986. She was 86 years old.
OMG. I feel like we were just getting to the good stuff. Oh, what a fascinating family and legacy.
Yeah, no kidding. I feel like we just got into it. But I really like hearing about all of the things that her family did and how she continued that legacy to better these communities. Like, you needed the background info, right?
Yeah.
Right. I really enjoyed this one, too. Matilda wrote in her will that her heirs should promote agricultural and livestock education in Argentina. To that end, her heirs began the Díaz Vélez Foundation, dedicated to the promotion of education in the agricultural environment to improve the people's quality of life and personal development. This foundation is going strong to this day. Its president is Matilda's nephew, Belisario Álvarez de Toledo. They offer classes, scholarships. It's a big deal. Check out our show notes for a link to their website.
Ooh, that sounds lovely.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
If you are wondering what happened to the Díaz Vélez Palace, when Eugenio passed away, his family sold the estate to the city of Buenos Aires. Since then, it's served as a hospital and headquarters of the Vitra Foundation, which deals with housing and labor. Very on brand for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
There are people petitioning for this building to be included in the National Monuments list so that it receives grants and protections. But as far as I know, from the date of this recording, April 5th, 2025, that hasn't happened yet. Yep, I dated us.
Yeah, it's fine. What I want to know is, can non-Argentinians sign this petition? Because this palace needs to be preserved.
Yeah, how can we help preserve it? But I love that it got donated to the city to be used publicly.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like exactly the kind of thing that Matilde and her family would have wanted.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That's what they do.
That's right.
All right, now we have reached the second part of our episode, the caryatid. A caryatid is a stone carving of a woman used as a column or a pillar to support the structure of a Greek or Greek-style building. In each episode, we choose a caryatid, a woman who is working today, furthering the profession through their work, and who ties into the historical woman of our episode. Drumroll, please.
La Fundación Díaz Vélez, the Díaz Vélez Foundation.
Yay!
Yeah.
It felt right and appropriate to shout out, well, the full name is the Carlos Díaz Vélez Foundation. So today, we're giving them the shout out. The Carlos Díaz Vélez Foundation was established in 1990 to honor the testament wishes of Matilda Díaz Vélez, who so deeply believed in the value of agricultural and livestock education for national growth. So she left three estates, Patina, Tita, and Rincón de Quequén in Buenos Aires, just for this purpose. The foundation was named after her father, as she would have wanted it, and its first board of directors was formed, led by Enrique Woodrow Álvarez de Toledo. The board of directors also includes Inés Álvarez de Toledo and the attorney María Videla Escalada.
Love this. It sounds like Matilde's efforts are living on and that her relatives are making that happen.
It's our definition of what a caryatid is. They are literally holding Matilde's legacy.
Yes.
To continue their mission of outreach, they offer classes to community members, scholarships for university, and programs for school children in the areas. Maria wanted to help people grow.
Love this. It sounds beautiful.
If you're in Argentina and interested in these subjects, careers, you should check out our show notes for links to the foundation so you can learn more about them.
Yes, do it.
Yeah. Like now that the episode's over, go do that like right now.
Right now.
Go.
Go.
Right now.
Yeah.
Before we say goodbye, we want to say thank you to CMYK for the music, John W., our technical advisor, and most of all, thank you for listening.
Remember to check out our show notes for links to all of our resources on this episode, as well as pictures of projects we've talked about.
We hope you enjoyed learning about today's lady and caryatid along with our banter, and that you are inspired to find out more about them and other amazing professional ladies.
Please let us know what you thought of our episode. If you've enjoyed it, please help us spread the word. Tell your friends, colleagues, sisters, and brothers, and tell them to give us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify, and write us a review. This will all help us reach a wider audience and for more people to learn about these amazing ladies with us.
Your support means everything to us. If you've enjoyed our content and want other ways to help us with our mission, you can support us by visiting our website for merchandise.
If you don't need any more swag, but you'd still like to consider supporting the research we're doing, you can donate to us on our website, shebuildspodcast.com/donate. Or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/shebuildspodcast. You can also find links to all of these items on our website.
She Builds Podcast is a member of the Gable Media Podcast Network. Gable Media is curated thought leadership for an audience dedicated to building a better world. Listen and subscribe to all the shows at GableMedia.com. That's GableMedia.com.
We're excited to hear from you and for you to come back and keep learning about bosses with us. You can email us your thoughts at shebospodcast@gmail.com, leave a comment on our website at shebospodcast.com, or follow us on Instagram and Facebook at shebospodcast and on X at shebuildspod. Until then,
bye.
Bye.
Adios.